Tastes like shit. Hi, everyone. Coffee tastes like shit.
It doesn't taste like shit. It's because you drink instant coffee. Is it? Are you drinking instant coffee?
Yeah, I am. And you know what? That shit is expensive.
I remember when I was in high school, you guys were just talking about instant coffee. Thanks for tuning in to the same drug.
Like crap.
Instant coffee is disgusting. You should never drink instant coffee.
Yeah, but I don't like any coffee, so it's not gonna. And you know, I have the palate of an 8-year-old. Like, I enjoy eating hot chips and chicken nuggets for dinner. So there's no point being like, oh, you're gonna like fancy coffee. No.
Wrong. Have you tried? Are you sure? Like, have you tried? Have you had?
I've tried like legit the best espresso in all of Italy that I was told I had to try in Rome, and I was like, ugh.
Oh no,
that's nice.
You do have the palate of an 8-year-old. Everyone, Laura only tried sushi this year.
No, sashimi.
Sorry, sashimi.
Yeah, like raw fish. Surprisingly good.
Really good.
And I'm not like, I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, I only eat, like, I've eaten, there's this like Filipino dish that's like chopped up intestines. I can't remember what it's called. I've eaten that. I've eaten crickets. Like, I've eaten all sorts of shit.
I love crickets. You mean like those like dried crunchy crickets that are salty?
I don't know. They serve them at like.
In Mexico with mezcal.
Oh, okay.
Right? Or is this different?
They're stir-fried in Vietnam. I don't know if they taste the same. Yeah,
they might be different. In Mexico, they give you crickets with your mezcal, and they're, like, dry and crunchy and salty.
And they're full of protein.
Yeah, I think that it's such a good snack. I was like, this is, like, low carb, and they're these crunchy, like, salt-flavored things are the best
and
things.
And, like, good everything. For the environment. It's not, like...
Right. Yeah.
Everyone should eat crickets.
Yeah, I was surprised. I didn't realize what they were when I was first eating them, actually. I was just, like, shoveling them into my mouth, and then I was like, oh, it's a bug.
It's like, yeah. The only thing is, legs get a bit weird. It's like, oh, okay, there's like, legs stuck in my teeth. It's kind of creepy.
Okay, yeah, and the stir-fried thing, it might be different because they'd be less crunchy, like, so they're more softer, so the legs would still be leggy as opposed to the whole thing.
They're still a little bit crisp, though, so.
Keto tequila shots. Exactly, exactly. I mean, that's like, I mean, can you get much more keto than that? I mean... Tequila, vodka, crickets.
Do you know the best diet, personally, if I had to choose one thing for the rest of my life, I would eat like prosciutto and like a good cheese, and I would just eat that for the rest of my life.
That's my diet. Mm. And red wine. I know red wine, it's I mean, expensive. The sugar in it. It is expensive, and it's quite salty, so you end up being, like, dehydrated all the time. I had to, like, level off my prosciutto eating, so it's like...
And then just, like, accidentally getting drunk because you're, like, needing to drink a lot.
Yeah, the combination. I mean, I sort of do that on purpose. Like, when I really want to get into my wine, I pair it with salty snacks, so you sort of go through it.
Nice.
These are our like gourmet tips, guys.
How to live well.
Diet tips, wine drink, like wine pairings, mezcal.
What
pairings.
Are you drinking tonight?
Oh, bourbon. I always drink bourbon. I drink Makers. It's funny because like I don't drink red wine.
Strike me as a bourbon drinker.
Yeah, I like bourbon and I like scotch. I usually just drink like red wine at home, but I don't want to have blue teeth on YouTube, so.
If you had to guess my drink of choice, what would you say?
Gin.
Did you know that or did you just guess really well?
No, you keep getting wasted on gin on the show. So I'd say last time when you got too drunk, you were like, drinking some like purple gin.
That was terrible. And I was mixing it with like a blackberry, like a Ribena type thing, like fancy Ribena. And then I threw up afterwards. So now I'm like.
This is why you guys have to tune into the Patreon only segments because.
Now I'm
one
like.
One time Laura got extremely wasted.
I didn't think I was that drunk. I was really surprised.
It did seem to come on suddenly.
Yes.
But I feel like that's what happens with those kind of cocktails. Like, that's why I don't drink vodka drinks. Like, I'll drink straight alcohol, like bourbon or scotch, and I like the taste. But if you drink cocktails that don't taste like booze, you just all of a sudden are wasted and you can't control it. I don't like it. I get too drunk.
Oh, they're so good, though.
Annie says, can we all collectively hold your hair as you do it? I guess so. I mean, this was, we'd signed off, and then she went to go barf.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then her boyfriend sent me a photo of her, like, passed out. she was, Mel, she was on painkillers that night, so it wasn't totally her fault. She was
that's right. And then, and antibiotics. Yeah. I shouldn't have been drinking.
Yeah, that's a tough
anyway.
One. Okay, so welcome to The Same Drugs with Megan Murphy. I'm Megan Murphy.
And I'm Laura McNally. Thanks. Not an alcoholic.
Well, how's your week been? How's the lockdown? What's going on in New Zealand?
Nothing. It's just kind of like dying off now, as in not people, as in like the virus is dying off. They're doing really well. So they're like winding back the restrictions. So like people are starting to go out of the house. So that's really fun. And yeah, we're doing great. Was there a terrorist attack in Canada?
A bunch of people. There was a mass shooting.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Is this related to Corona? What was it related to?
Don't know. No, it wasn't related to Corona, I don't think. It was a man, obviously, because mass shootings are always perpetrated by men.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was some pretty sad news this week. It seems like things are loosening up here in BC also, or about to loosen up, but I really, really would like them to open the bar.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really care
about anything else
too much of a I was like, what kinds of things, like, I feel like I've forgotten what I do, like, I like, since we've been in lockdown, and I've just been like in my house most of the time, or like you know, I've gone for walks or gone to the park with friends a few times, but I can't, I'm like, what is it that I would be doing otherwise? Like, it's really hard for me to figure it out. Like, I'm like, I guess, like, I definitely went to the bar. So is that all I did before? Like, I don't understand.
I went to the bar, touched my face, and used a lot of non-essentials. So, yeah, like the bar and like hair. It would be nice to get a haircut. Like, that would be amazing. I really just realized how difficult it is to like not have a hairdresser. Because I was like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. And then my boyfriend had to cut his hair, and there was just fucking hair all over the house, and his hair looked fucking ridiculous. And I was like, wow, hairdressers are actually quite a big deal when you don't have them.
Well, I just haven't been, I have done nothing to my hair. I'm just letting it grow, but it's getting pretty long. And I mean, it doesn't really affect me that much because my roots are not that much different than the rest of my hair, so it doesn't really matter, and it's already long, so it's just getting longer, but I would like a haircut. Someone says I miss my yoga class. I know, well, I miss the exercise. True. Like, I miss going to the pool, and I need to go to the gym stuff.
Yeah,
that part sucks. Like, I do stuff at home, but it's not really that fun. Like, lifting weights by yourself at home is so boring. Like,
and I was like building a lot of strength before. I just started doing deadlifts, and I was like really excited, and that's just gone out the window. Like, I'll be back to square one.
I know. Me too. Like, I had been doing weight training for the past year or whatever, and so I'm kind of trying to do some stuff at home that my trainer gave me to do. Like, but I don't have I don't have weights here. So it's all like, I'm doing like,
it's just not the same.
I'm doing it's just not. It's just, I can't do the same kind of training, but I'm still trying to do stuff so that when I can go back, I won't be totally at square one.
They've opened all the restaurants for takeaways and cafes for takeaways. Someone's asked, did you get your first level 3 coffee? I will get my first level 3 hot chocolate tomorrow. And
hot chocolate. And the baby.
There's like one restaurant in this whole region. We're in the Coromandel, which is like north about it. Actually, I don't even know where it is. There's like one really good restaurant and it's right next to our house. So we're going to get takeaway tomorrow for the first time in like 2 months. That's really exciting.
Oh, our restaurants have all been open for takeout this whole time. I get takeout like once a week.
Oh.
Yeah, everything delivers.
What's everyone so pissed off about over there then?
I know. This is what I keep saying. Like, it's really, it's fine here. Like, it's not been that bad. Like, it sucks. Like, I feel like I miss my friends. Like, I want to be around people. But it's not, like, we can, like, we have full access to, like, food and booze and outside. We just, like, we can't have events. We can't gather in groups. Like, you can still, and people are already kind of, like, because we flattened the curve here in BC, people are already, you know, being less strict and weird about it. Like, people are going to hang out just outside and in small, like, I don't, you know, I'm not staying 2 meters apart from my friend at the park at this point. Like, you know, we're, the whole point of the lockdown and social isolation really was to keep the healthcare system from being overwhelmed. So we've dealt with that. And now we have to start opening things up and just continuing to be really careful. And obviously, we're not going to be allowed to have big events and parties and festivals and whatever. Yeah. And I'm sure there'll be travel restrictions and people who are vulnerable are going to have to be really careful. We're going to have to be really careful about the care homes, because that's still where, that's where the outbreaks are still happening. Yeah.
So but one thing I've been wondering about people who are really, you know, going into this, and they don't like to be called conspiracy theorists, but, you know, they're talking about police state and civil liberties and da-da-da. And I was thinking about, like, I find them irritating, and I question some of them are potentially using this to, like, build their own platform, and they see it as an opportunity, which is really funny because they're sort of accusing other people of opportunism, which they're kind of doing in another format. But then at the same time, I was like, well, I also can appreciate the people that are saying that, like, oh, I'm thinking critically, which all of us are. Everyone who's kind of aware of what's going on thinks critically. But so thank you for that. But the other thing I was thinking is, like, they feel as though we're suppressing their views and their voices, and like Instagram deletes shit, Facebook deletes shit if you share misinformation. And I can kind of appreciate, like, they don't want to, they also don't want to get canceled.
Well, I actually do think that's a problem. I don't think that Facebook and Instagram should be censoring those people. Or, like, YouTube's doing it, too. Like, you're not allowed to share those conspiracy theories about 5G on YouTube. Or, like, I know people who've been banned from Facebook for sharing that stuff. And I don't buy it, obviously. But I like, the idea that social media companies, these massive companies, should be in charge of what is good information and bad information and what we should be allowed to see should be very troubling to people, more so than maybe you're going to see a conspiracy theory on the internet and then hopefully you'll think it through critically. I mean, that's like protecting people from themselves in that way, I think, is very creepy and unnecessary. And yeah, lots of people don't think critically and lots of people do kind of just buy whatever they read. But what the response to that should be, to be encouraging people to think critically and to be looking towards different media sources and to not just believe everything they read on the internet, as opposed to pretending like what's on the internet is necessarily good information because, oh, Facebook Corporation is going to take care of that for you. Like, that's pretty freaky.
It's strange to me, though, that people still have some kind of view of, like, oh, we're not thinking critically. We're not thinking critically. I mean, is the whole fake news thing, has that not at least brought to light that everyone is thinking critically? Like, trust in news media is at an all-time low. So what they're getting at is that there's like a truth. There's this truth that's kind of hidden. And if you think critically enough, you're going to get to this objective truth. And like, yes, there are truths that are concealed or skewed depending on who's presenting the information around coronavirus. But like, does everyone need to get to the truth? Are we all like public health official making policy decisions, or can we just kind of do the best we can with what information we have? I don't
get the urgency. Yeah, well, and even the experts don't have the whole truth. Like, this has all been a bit of an experiment, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't like when we decided to do the lockdowns and social isolation, we knew that that was going to work. That was just, you know, they've done that in the past in terms of dealing with pandemics, and it seemed like a potentially effective way to deal with it. But, you know, a lot of people didn't really have, including experts and obviously the politicians who were making these decisions and authorities, you know, they're just making their best guess based on the information that we have. And we all, you know, there in a lot of cases, there is no one truth. You know, there's a bunch of truths, and, you know, you kind of just try to discern good information and bad information and do your best. And
I find it troubling that people think that there is this sort of, and it's not always the kind of Illuminati New World Order people, but there's this like undertone of the kind of behind the curtain, there are these like big bad guys who are like plotting, and it may not be that they've planned COVID, although some people believe that, but that they're kind of plotting behind the curtain how to like get us all. And it's like, where is that coming from? Yes, there's opportunists, like everywhere you look, there's corruption in every sector, even in the non-for-profit sector, even in the charity sector, there's corruption. There's people taking advantage. But
well, people don't trust, it's partly that people don't trust the media, and it's partly that people don't trust the government. And that's fair. I mean, you shouldn't necessarily trust the media or the government or authorities. But I mean, I think people, it's funny because I think that often the people who think that they're the most, the critical thinkers and the ones who are the most radical and who are challenging the status quo often really aren't critical thinkers at all. And rather they've just latched onto a specific ideology that they've labeled as critical thought or as radical or as revolutionary. And we can see that, of course, like in the left and in feminism, wherein, you know, the left and feminists often see themselves as the ones pushing back against the status quo and challenging the status quo and questioning everything, when in reality, they're just as much attached to ideology and rigid in their thought and their analysis as anyone else.
I think also part of it is when you first kind of have a political awakening and you come to recognize like capitalism is inherently oppressive. Capitalism is inherently racist. And so therefore anyone who's participating in anything to do with capitalism is participating in oppression. And I can understand when you have a superficial reading. And I believe, you know, like I went into my PhD with a very specific reading of capitalism and a belief that, you know, people were actively seeking to oppress others. And the deeper I went into political economy and political philosophy, the more I realized like it's far more complex than people who engage in capitalism are bad and narcissists and we should take them all out. Like that is so oversimplified, but I can see how it hooks people in and they think like,
well, it's an easy analysis.
Yeah.
It's an easy analysis, and it allows you to sort of signal to your comrades on the internet that you're left wing. I mean, I've obviously been getting in trouble for a little while now, and particularly this week, because people have decided that they keep announcing that I'm moving to the right and that I'm becoming right wing, which I find hilarious, because really what it reveals is that these people don't have any idea what the term right wing means. Like, it's like, what do you think it means to be right wing exactly? Because it's definitely not me, and it's not any of my beliefs. But I think that one of their problems with me is that I don't virtue signal. So I don't play those games. I don't play the identity politics game. So I don't go around announcing, you know, I mean, I've stopped repeating the same line over and over and over again. And I feel like I did that for a long time in my work, and I just got bored of listening to myself talk because I was just repeating myself over and over and over again. So I don't go around saying race, class, patriarchy, porn culture, rape culture all the time. And it's not because I'm not, you know, interested in these issues and I don't care and it's not part of my analysis. It's just that I don't want to signal to you constantly by repeating these things. That's too easy. I just want to talk and have conversations, and I want to talk and have real conversations with real people who didn't go to school for these things or who weren't trained in leftist ideology or feminist ideology, so don't know what all those code words are. And there's other ways to look at the world. Like, we just, you know, there's no one truth. There's different truths and different perspectives and different experiences, and we're going to see things differently, and that's okay. But of course it's not okay.
Well, see, I can appreciate that. Well, firstly, I lean towards positivism. So if we're going to talk about a kind of like, I don't want to be academic, but if we're going to talk about our orientation to understanding the truth, so our epistemology, say, I'm more of a pragmatist. I believe there is actually, there are universal truths, and we can get to the truth through a process, something like empiricism, where social constructivists would argue there is no truth. You can't really get to a truth. You can only deconstruct the systems that are set up to Emma, God's sake.
Emma, I can't come help you right now. You're just going to have to get yourself in.
Can she not jump on your lap, like, while you're
She's trying to get under the blanket, and she wants, she's staring at me, and she wants me to come over and lift up the blanket can go under the blanket. And she's like, I can't do it myself and looking at me.
God damn it, Emma, learn
I how think to that, lift the blanket up. You know, I think that there are certainly truths. There are, of course, there are truths, but at the same time, when we're talking about analyzing, you know, like art or humor or film or writing, then there are going to always be different perspectives. I mean, I was thinking about, like, you know,
the bat shirt
that created all this, like, horrible, like, backlash against me this week. Mostly because people didn't read the article, but, you know, because they all shared a bunch of screenshots from comments that out of context, and then said that I really loved rape and loved rape jokes, and that I thought racism was funny, which is based in nothing. But, you know, what they kept saying about that article is, like, I'm defending racist jokes. And I was like, well, I'm not. The article wasn't about the bat shirt. I didn't read the bat shirt as racist, and lots of other people didn't, and other people did. And so that's what I'm saying. I'm like, I'm not saying there is a truth. I mean, first of all, you should probably ask the guy who made it what his intention was, and what his joke was, what he was trying to say with that. 'Cause I assume he knows. But also, you know, like, I accept that some people might read that shirt as racist, and I accept that other people don't, and I accept that some people would read it as a joke about the idea that it was just one bat that caused all this. Like, that's how I read it, that it was kind of like, you know, it was this, because the comment that he'd made under his post about the shirt was something like, we don't know what happened, but we know a bat was involved. So it's joking about that, or a joke about, you know, a larger criticism of the wet markets or something like that. Or mocking Chinese culture. But either way, I mean, it wasn't an attack on Chinese individuals or Chinese people, and it was an art. And I'm not interested in censoring art. It wasn't, I didn't think the shirt was particularly great or funny either. That was the other irritating thing about all these people saying, like, she's saying it was a joke, and I'm saying it was meant as a joke. I'm not saying I necessarily found it. Okay, Emma.
Sorry. She's, like, building up and getting louder.
She's getting worse. She's like, hello, hello.
The blankets.
I think I have to go. Okay, just calm down. I'll come help you. Good girl. But, you know, that's what I mean, is that it's like these people are insisting, this is racist, this is the thing, this is the analysis, and if you don't see it that way, then you're a racist.
Yes.
And anybody who doesn't see that way is therefore defending racism. Like, it's these leaps and these leaps and these leaps, and they're so lacking in intellectual integrity, because that's not really what's going on. And it's refusing to accept that there are people who see things different than you, and your perspective is not the only valid perspective. And you can't just go around announcing identity in order to bully people into accepting your perspective and not talking about what they really think. I mean, you can because that's what they're doing. But, you know, a lot of white women who were accusing me of being a racist, which is, you know, like a really like fucked up thing to say about somebody, especially considering that for the past 10 years of my life, I've been providing a platform to hundreds and hundreds of women around the world, including hundreds of women of color and working class women and prostituted women and activists and, you know, and academics and, you know, all these women working on the front line. So like, really go fuck yourself. And like, why don't you do something? Why don't you contribute instead of posting fucking screenshots on Twitter and acting like you're fucking activist? But you know, like, it's like, you don't, when I have done nothing and said nothing that is actually racist, like, do you want that word to mean anything, or do you not want it to mean anything at all? Do you want it to just be a word that you throw around to smear people and censor them and to bully them into not, you know, what I did was I stood up for what I believed. I thought that what happened was wrong. I think cancel culture is disgusting. I think it's unproductive. I think what those people did, all that did is allow Lululemon to profit. I've already explained all this. I hate talking about what I already wrote very clearly in an article, but you know,
I know, but like, you have to understand most people don't read things in depth. So you got to say it like a handful of times. That's something I've learned the more I work in social media, is that you really have to repeat things a lot. And it's, to you, you feel like a broken record, but to people who are listening, it's often the first time they're, taking it in, even if they might have heard it before.
Right. Yeah, yeah. That's true. Totally. Yeah. Art says, what was that, what you were spitting hot fire about this week? Yeah. So that was, I posted on Facebook this week saying essentially, you know, like, if you want me to be who I am, then you have to let me be who I am. Like, you would not have followed my work in the first place if I were not the kind of person who said what I thought and who was authentic and who stood up for what I believed in, even when it was unpopular. That's what I've done for my entire career. I have always done that, and I'm continuing to do that now. And now that I'm saying things that, you know, don't fit the box you want me to be in, then you're trying to force me back in the box. And then if I don't go back in the box, you're canceling me. But that, what they don't understand is that they wouldn't have liked me in the first place, and I wouldn't exist in the first place. You know, they're mad at me for having this platform and then not doing their bidding, or, you know, doing what they want me to do. But the reason I have this platform is because of who I am and because of my work and because I am willing to say things that I know that I'm going to lose friends over and lose income over and lose support over. And, you know, this has happened to me countless times. I've been attacked online countless times. I've been attacked in person, you know, like, it's been incredibly difficult and stressful, and I keep doing it. And now they want to act like, oh my God, what's happened to her? She's going right wing. It's like, nothing's happened to me. This is who I am. Like, and this is why you followed my work. So you don't have to agree with me all the time. I would never expect anyone to agree with me all the time. You can totally disagree with me, but you don't get to write off every single thing that I've fucking done for the past 10 years and continue to. As they're telling me I'm a racist, I'm like up until 3 a.m. trying to edit a podcast with a woman talking about how marginalized women are impacted by these pandemics and what happens to migrant women when these lockdowns happen, and what's happening to women in the global South, and like women who are in abusive relationships, women who are domestic workers, women who are in caregiving roles, which is, you know, what women are always doing, and how hard that is, and how hard it is to be poor and prostituted and what's happening in the porn industry. Like, go fuck yourself, actually.
I think the really tricky thing with, when race comes into it is that it becomes incredibly polarizing. And like for you, there's a sense that like you're doing this work, you've always done this work, and then people will go, well, then why don't you get on this bandwagon? And it's like, I support the idea of being anti-racist. I'm willing to do the work. I'm willing to, you know, deconstruct things that I believe are problematic, But at the same time, you can't expect everyone to jump on every bandwagon because you personally think they should. Where do you draw the line? Like I said before, people will say, well, capitalism is inherently oppressive and racist. Therefore, if you're not anti-capitalist, you're in effect racist. And it's like, you know, at some point, like, we're all participating in systems that we can agree are problematic. We can agree capitalism is problematic. We can agree that there's, kind of oppressive systems at play that marginalize certain groups of people. Does it mean that every single thing everyone says you've got to jump on personally?
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, totally. Like, it's like, wait a minute. I have to agree with you, and not just agree with you, but I have to lie about what I think because I already told you what I think, but you want me to say something different, even though you know that's not what I think. So you want me to lie to you because of the identity that you've announced. And often the identity that's announced is not even, you know, I'm a woman of color or I'm trans or I'm working class or whatever. I mean, class is completely ignored in all these contexts. Yeah. So I shouldn't even mention that. No one gives a shit about
no one
class anymore, even though that's one of the most important things, if not the most important thing. Right. You know, living in poverty is going to make you fucking marginalized and oppressed and suffer in a myriad of ways, more so than probably anything else. But let's not talk about it. Let's talk about fucking, like,
it's not popular. It's not cool right now.
The cool identities. But, you know, in a lot of cases, it's white women, you know, using not even an actual woman of color, but just a vague woman of color who they apparently speak for. And all women of color apparently share the same opinion about everything. Mm-hmm. So it's white women saying to me, you're a racist, you know, like, we need to listen to women of color. It's like, well, why should I listen to you? Oh, well, you know, women of color are saying, it's like, oh, they are? All of them? Are you in charge here?
Yeah, I noticed.
Okay, because you're a white middle class lady, so maybe you should sit down. Is that how this works?
But that's the thing. It's like, I don't want to play this game. Someone said in response to one of our clips, it was like, well, what qualifications do you have to speak on China? And I'm like, I'm not going to play this game. I'm not going to tell you my history, my family's history, the places I've lived, the things I've done to validate your worldview that only certain people can speak. If you want to read me as a middle-class white woman who has no right to speak on anything related to oppression, that's your business. But I'm not going to validate the identity politics by telling you my personal history and why I have an understanding of the issues around the exotic meat trade, or in fact, the misogyny that's inherent to the exotic meat trade, which I think is actually a real feminist issue. Why exotic meat is in the industry in the first place has a lot to do with misogyny, and women should really be talking about it. And in particular, women who are not in China should be talking about it, because if you're a woman in China, you can't talk about it. So I'm not interested in playing the game of, oh, these are all the reasons I think I should have a valid opinion. Like, I'm not going to do that. I know I have a valid opinion, and I don't need someone else to say, oh, yes, I've decided you tick enough oppression boxes to have an opinion. Like,
and that feels gross to announce those boxes, too. And, I mean, what's also gross about all of this is that the people that do this, whether they're the white women who are, you know, using women of color as a shield to protect themselves from accountability so they don't have to explain their opinions and accusations, or it's women who are women of color and saying, I'm blah, so listen to me and you don't know and you can't speak you can't speak about China because, I don't know, can only Chinese people speak about China then? Because you're not Chinese,
well,
you're
black,
so maybe you don't get
sensitive
to speak about China either. Like, I don't really...
But Chinese people are censored from speaking about China, so...
Right, exactly. So how could they? But, you know, like, it's that they don't know how many people are not announcing their identities. So, you know, there's so many women that I talk to who say, you know, like, I actually came from a third world country. I was born there, or like, I actually am an immigrant, or, you know, like, I'm part indigenous or whatever it is. And nobody knows that. So they talk to me like they think that they know my, like, they make assumptions about me, and I would have to announce and say, I'm a woman of color, like, I come from poverty, I come from working class, I was prostituted, whatever it is, like, I have a disability, you know, in order to gain legitimacy, and I don't want to do that. Like, that doesn't feel, you should, like, why are all of our voices not legitimate? Why do we have to, like, put ourselves in these categories? It's such a gross and self-defeating way to have discussions.
It's kind of self-objectifying in a way. It's like, I need to tick certain boxes to meet criteria to have a perspective that's valid. Like, I don't get it. I understand, because when I know someone's life story and they're trying to tell me, oh, you know, I've been through trauma and I've been through this, and I'm like, no, you haven't. I know you personally, because I know personally that you haven't. So I get that that's gross, but you can't assume, like, oh, you're white, so you've never been through anything, so therefore you can't speak on anything.
Right. Well, wow. That's the other thing, is that privilege doesn't work like that. So, mm-hmm. You know, of course there's circumstances where there's going to be a white woman who is suffering significantly more marginalization than a woman of color, because, mm-hmm. you know, she's poor, she's in prostitution, whatever it is, she has a disability, I don't know. And then a woman of color is perhaps, you know, middle class or upper class and, you know, educated or working in academia, mm-hmm. you know, like, it just doesn't work like this. There is not such a simple hierarchy. And Annie says in the comments, being from Latin America makes me a woman of color by default, apparently. So I guess my opinion is now decided for me, right? Like, it's like, you're not letting women speak for themselves, because you've decided that women of color all have this one opinion, and it's your opinion.
It's so bizarre. Like,
this is so convenient for you. What happens when a person of color has a different opinion? They don't exist. That's what they do. They're erasing all these swaths of people just to try to bully other people and to pretend as though, you know, their opinion is the right opinion. Annie also said something else that I thought was good. Oh, she said, I hate having to pull my intersectionality cards in order to have my opinion heard. It's very dehumanizing. Like, why would you want to do that? Like, you don't want to play that game for a reason. I'm not saying I'm a woman of color, because clearly I have no color at all.
No, but it's very gross and it's very strange to me. Like, I've said this before, I find it quite odd when there's this new term, Black Indigenous Person of Color, like that. So you're grouping Black people, Indigenous people, and anyone that's brown into one group. That's so bizarre to me, because there's so many different contexts where those factors come into play, and they're all different. Like, that's so weird. If you called someone a BIPOC, I'd be like, what is wrong with you? Could you refer to where they're from rather than saying they're a BIPOC?
Right. That's so strange. And I mean, beyond that, I mean, I think this actually is racism, because it's stereotyping people based on their race. So you're saying, like, and you're also grouping, like, people of color, like, half who the fuck world? Is that referring to? Like, that's an half extremely diverse category.
Yes.
Jesus Christ. Yes. Different histories, different cultures, different countries, different cities, different upbringings. Like, Jesus.
But here's the thing. This is what
that's fucking racist. Holy shit.
I feel like this has a lot to do with the view of capitalism and Western imperialism. And there's a narrative that seems to be quite popular at the moment, which is that Western imperialism, and there's this kind of wave of colonization, and it was just a singular event, the colonization of the Western world colonizing the poor Black Indigenous people of color, and it happened all at one time, and there was all imperialism. And it's like, do you know the history of human movement and how many different occupations and how many times people have colonized different places and left them, including Indigenous people having had colonized other places or left them or taken over. So are they now part of the Western imperialism that has overrun the world. Like, no, it's a process. It's a living process. There has been multiple waves. Some of them are incredibly problematic, and we should be very, and everyone is critical of them. Like, with the exception of people who we kind of disregard because they're just flat out racists who are like, no, the white way is the best way. Like, we don't, nobody believes that except psychopaths. So we can put that aside and like think more deeply about it.
Go call the racists racist. Like, go call people racist who are saying that white people are better than whomever it is.
But like, the thing is, even dealing with Trump and his supporters being like, oh, you're a fucking racist. What are you going to achieve? You're not going to change their mind. Like, this cancel culture approach of,
no, and that's, you're a racist. That's usually based on policy issues. That's not even usually based on racist behavior. Mm. You know, when they're calling people who vote for Trump racist, you know, I have to go help my dog. She's so sad. She needs to get under the blanket. So I don't know. You're going to have to just like, I'll literally be back in half a second. I'm wearing sweatpants tonight. I decided to stop wearing.
Are you going to have to show us your pants?
I don't know. I'm trying to avoid it. You can look how nice my plant's getting, guys.
I'm actually wearing pants in. Oh, babe, don't. I'm not being canceled. So I think one thing that's really interesting is talking about the way Black, Indigenous, and people of color have been homogenized. And there was a really great tweet, which I don't know what his name is, but he is an ethnic minority in China. And there's a number of ethnic minorities in China who are incredibly persecuted. There's people in concentration camps, right, effectively in China, people who are disappeared all the time for being ethnic minorities. And he said, I'm making a complaint about people who are classing any criticism of the Chinese CBC, government.
To the CBC, yeah. He wanted to complain to the CBC because the CBC said that anybody who criticized the Chinese government or China was a racist. And he was like, what? Fuck you.
Right. And he was like, I'm an ethnic minority from China and I need people to think critically about what the Chinese government is doing. And so, therefore, your generalization that this is racist is actually racist in and of itself. Yeah. So now we go to, like, the inception phase of unpacking racism, which is, like, by this homogenization and this approach of anything that we might be out of class is racist. We got to gather it all up. And anytime you're not out there fucking, you're racist. Anytime you're not part of that, you must be one of them. You must be one of the racists.
Yeah.
Like, there gets to a point where what you're doing is actually disadvantaging already disadvantaged people, like this guy who's an ethnic minority from China. So this anti-racist approach, how effective is it in actually bringing forth the most marginalized voices?
Well, it's not effective at all. I mean, this is what makes me so angry, is that these people who act like they're doing anti-racist activism are doing nothing. And they're achieving nothing. They're just, they went and got this guy fired from his job at Lululemon because he shared a link and then blew it out of proportion, like acting, saying that he's a racist and, like, you know, and then of course anybody who dared defend him is a racist and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think so much of this has to do with social media culture and that people can say these things and not be accountable. You know, it's that, you know, people can have anonymous accounts. Not all the people tweeting about this guy were anonymous. A lot of them were not. But, you know, the people who are busy slandering me across the internet right now, there's all these anonymous people. The woman who wrote the blog post accusing me of racism, wherein she didn't address anything that I said in that article, not a single fucking thing, and accuse me of being Islamophobic somehow, like, or implied as such, you know, like, I don't really speak or write about Islam, although I probably should start because Islam deserves criticism.
Is that because I mentioned it one time?
No, none of it is based on anything. These are just leaps. Like, she, and she wrote it anonymously. So this woman who, and I know who she is, and she's a middle-class academic. I was informed of who she was today by a woman who works on the front lines with migrant women and prostituted women every single day. She told me who it was, and it's a middle-class academic living in France who's not a part of the movement, who does not work on the front lines, who's not marginalized, who, French, you know, people? Worked in kind of cahoots with a few white women in Canada who were angry at me and wanted to find a way to take me down and use this woman to do it, and then used women of color to do it. Oh, well, it's a woman of color. It's like, how does anybody know if this is a woman of color? How does anybody know anything about this? She wrote something anonymously, and we're all supposed to smear Megan and cancel Megan because one woman wrote a completely baseless article based on nothing that I wrote or said, didn't engage with my arguments, didn't engage with, you know, my work over the past decade, because you have a problem with me, and the problem that you have with me is that I won't stay in line, and I actually do think critically, and I actually am an independent thinker, and I actually do ask questions, and you don't like that I ask those questions, and you're angry that I continue to associate with people that you don't like. Like, this whole, like, shitty Mean Girls Club thing, like, part of what is that, sorry, I'm, like, ranting a bit, but part of what's at the root of this is, one, people, just because I've been doing this for so long, so I know how people get, people feel personally slighted, and I don't know why, so they're taking things personally that I'm not even aware that I've done, you know, and they're holding all this bitterness and anger and resentment because I don't know why. They feel ignored, I said something to them that they took in a certain way, you know, like, I'm extremely busy, so I often am not able to respond to all my emails and messages, so, you know, those kinds of things piss people off. And then, you know, they really don't like somebody, you know, these people, you know, they don't like Wolf, and I continue to, you know, do events with Wolf and go on panels with Wolf. I respect those women. I don't agree with everything that they do or say. Not fucking at all. I'm not a member of Wolf. But I'm trying to work with as many people as I can to get work done. And just because I don't agree with somebody, this is the thing they can't get through their fucking heads, that I can work with somebody even when I don't agree with them.
Yeah.
Even if I don't like them that much, I can still get along with them and work with them and have a conversation with them, do a panel with them, whatever. They're mad that I'm friends with Posey because they don't like Posey. They're angry that I'm friendly with John Kay. They're angry that I'm friendly with Brendan O'Neill. They're angry that I have conversations with people that they don't like, that are not on the same ideological page as them entirely. And, you know, like, this is what I want to do. And I'm sorry, like, I'm going to keep doing it. That's why I started this channel, so I could have conversations with people that I don't agree with about different things. We have an entire platform, Feminist Current, to talk to women and big up women and support women's work and highlight women's voices, women who don't have anywhere else to talk or put their work or say these things. That's what it is for. And I want to do something different as well. So I'm creating a different way to do that. Like, stop
this.
Are
these people, like, who believe that you need to only speak to certain people, also people, women or feminists, who are critical of cancel culture, would you say?
I don't know if they would call it cancel culture, but they're critical of the same behaviors when trans activists and the left do it. So that's the other thing that is frustrating, is that they don't see that they're behaving in exactly the same way as the trans activists and the sex work lobbyists and these supposed leftists, which is that, you know, you associate with the wrong person and you're a TERF and you're out. You ask the wrong question and you're a TERF and you're out.
You like a tweet that I think was sent by someone that I personally have a problem with, so now you're a TERF. Like, this is the kind of narrowing and black and white thinking, and that's what I wanted to talk to you about. And from a psychological perspective, this black and white thinking is very dysfunctional and is, in some ways, it is a reflection of some kind of dysregulation that's going on within the person, where they're seeking the outside world to help regulate the way they feel. So they feel like triggered, something has set them off, and they need other people to behave in a certain way that will help them come back down, that will help them feel like, okay, actually the world is safe, people agree with me, everything's okay. And the thing is that, like, being an adult, that's not how the world works for us. That is how the world should work for us as children. For a lot of us, it didn't. And a lot of people have a lot of, you know, like, really tough stuff to deal with around the fact that we weren't validated as children. The world wasn't safe for us as children. And those kind of things that play out in adulthood. And I was saying this to you around when you start operating under, it's called FOG. That's a kind of short way of, that's the acronym, which is fear, obligation, and guilt. Anytime you're behaving in a way that is shaped by feeling fear, obligation, or guilt, means that you're effectively, you're enmeshing yourself with someone else's psyche. It means you're taking on someone else's problems as your own. And I feel like there's so much of this in political and social justice movements where, you know, I have this overwhelming problem and I need you to help me carry it. And in some ways, feminism is about that. It is about collective consciousness raising. But at the same time, we really need to develop healthy boundaries, because we cannot go around living in fear, obligation, and guilt of everyone around us. It means we're essentially a sponge. We're completely unstable. We're completely unprotected. We're just constantly taking on everyone else's problems. I mean, you couldn't operate. You could never run Feminist Current if you didn't have healthy boundaries around your own, you know, psychological well-being. If you were living in constant fear, obligation, and guilt, which is what these people are trying to do to you, they're saying, like, and it's the same thing with trans activism. They want you to be afraid. They want you to feel obligated, and they want you to feel guilty. And through those mechanisms, they will force you into behaving in a way that validates their pain. And that's really unhealthy, because even if you do validate their pain, it doesn't resolve the underlying issue, because the underlying issue is deeply within them. And no amount of validation from you is going to change something that requires a shift within themselves. And so that's why I said Canada is really fucked up by changing the legislation around gender identity, because they've shifted legislation because of fear, obligation, and guilt from a group of people who really need more support to validate within themselves something that no one external to them can ever resolve for them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's such an interesting way of putting it, and it's true. And, you know, I often wonder if it's like people get so angry at me and try to take me down so much because I don't do that, you know, because I won't, you know, because I am sure of myself. And so when people kind of try to guilt trip me or try to play these games with me that usually work on other people, like the identity politics mm-hmm. thing, the intersectionality thing, where it's like they throw out these code words that are supposed to make me cower in fear or take mm-hmm. back what I've said or agree with right. them or bow down or whatever. And it, you know, and it's true, you know, like if I didn't have healthy boundaries, I would have been way too overwhelmed by the stress of running Feminist Current all these years and, you know, mm-hmm. dealing with, I mean, part of it is, you know, people don't really understand what that is like, you know, like I deal mm-hmm. with and have dealt with, like, just countless women over the years in terms of editing. And, you know, like, I have to deal with difficult personalities and people yeah. who have been traumatized. And, you know, yeah. like, I have to do my job despite whatever other people want me to do. And mm-hmm. also while being blamed for everything and attacked for everything and held accountable for everything. And everything we published there is my responsibility and my fault, despite the fact that, of course, I published things there that I don't necessarily completely agree with.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that is a good and interesting analysis.
It's a huge responsibility. I think people really underestimate when you're working in, I think there's one thing that I've learned from, I work with a number of like influencers, right? And people kind of think like, oh, you've got this platform, like you've got all this privilege, all these people follow you, all these people look up to you. What more could you want? You know, you've got all every freedom in the world to just have your say. And it's like, you don't realize this is a fucking job. Like yeah. This managing people's expectations, managing what people expect of you, want from you, think you should do, trying to be both responsible for other people, trying to be, trying to use your own voice in a way that helps other people, in a way that helps the most people without necessarily marginalizing anyone, without necessarily privileging one perspective over another, trying to hold a range of perspectives, trying to represent a range of people. It's a huge job. It's not just like, oh, I'll just do whatever the fuck I want and it's just fun and all these people love me. That's not how it is at all. It's a huge fucking job. It's a full-time job. Like,
and it's very having a stressful. Platform
is a huge job. Yeah.
It's a lot of pressure and you spend a lot of time. Like, I think people just think, I mean, I'm not an influencer, but like, I sort of can relate to what those people are doing in their work in certain ways. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think that people just think that you just like show up on the internet and fucking spout off about make whatever. And like same thing with my writing. It's like people just think I'm just like, or they think like I saw someone online saying that, you know, like, oh, the Spectator probably pitched this to her. And basically, I mean, it's such a sexist comment coming from somebody who claims to be a Marxist feminist, but that, you know, I was just essentially doing what men were telling me to do. And it's like, no, I pitched this article to them because I was livid when I heard this story. But also, calling me an opportunist mm-hmm. and saying that I was doing it for economic reasons, for financial mm-hmm. gain. And it's like, I got paid $100 to write that article, you piece of shit. Like, sorry to swear so much, but it's like, how dare you? Like, I write that. I really love writing for The Spectator. Mm. But they pay much less than other, like there's other places that I could write for that pay more than that for sure. And I enjoy it. I like writing for them. And sometimes those pieces aren't serious. Sometimes those pieces are joking. Like I do, it is also for me, you know, like writing is also for me because I'm a writer. So I have to do it and it fulfills me. And this is how I express myself and feel like a whole human being. Mm-hmm. But I would never write something that, you know, I didn't believe in. I wouldn't write it if I didn't think that it mattered. Mm-hmm. But I mean, yeah, like those, to be like an influencer, to be, it is a lot of work and it is so much responsibility and it's really hard. And everything that you do is scrutinized and attacked. And, you know, like you're trying to deal with keeping everybody happy and mm-hmm. you can't do that. Like, I don't know what people have really no understanding of what others are going through. And they have very little empathy for people who claim to care mm-hmm. about things like empathy and social justice and people's well-being and things like that.
That reminds me of one more thing. So in terms of, we were talking about the fear, obligation, and guilt that people use to try and manipulate or, and they're not, I'm not saying people are doing this consciously with you, but it lives in the undertone of relationships when people are wanting someone else to fulfill something within them. And through that, they kind of manifest this fear and obligation and guilt. And so one of the things that psychologists talk about is to not jade with these people. And so jade stands for not justifying, arguing, defending, or explaining. Because anytime you engage in those behaviors, you're essentially fueling what is within them that has caused them to respond, to try and get you into a state of fear, obligation, and guilt. And by engaging in justifying, arguing, defending, or explaining, you're starting to feed into the fear, obligation, and guilt. So the fastest way to kind of shut down people trying to overstep your boundaries or push you into thinking a certain way is to not engage in it defending yourself, but to instead like double down on, this is my position. It doesn't have to be your position, and I'm happy for you to have a different position than me. And that's so, like, right now, what could be more important than the fact that we all have to get along despite having different positions? Like, this idea that we can only talk to people who have the same positions, it's only going to get worse. Like, shit is only going to get more polarized. We're going to have to find ways to be friends with, talk to, and work with people who have different positions than us. Like, it's not possible. Maybe it was possible 100 years ago to, like, oh, I'm only going to be friends with people that are conservative or that have this particular way of looking at politics. It's just not feasible anymore, like, right, especially with the internet.
And ironically, I mean, it's so funny because you're so right. That's so true. But people are doubling down on that thing where you should only be exposed to and only talk to people who agree with you. I mean, that's another thing people have been getting really angry at me about, is that I'm talking to people that I don't share a lot of views with, but what mm-hmm. I'm talking to them about is the stuff that we agree on in many mm-hmm. cases. You know, sometimes we'll talk about stuff we agree on, but often what I'm doing is trying to find common ground mm-hmm. with people that might have wildly different opinions to me in other places. And people treat that as though I'm rubber stamping or signing on to all their views and behaviors, which of course I'm not doing. And I find that so weird. You know, it's like, the reason that I conduct interviews is to, you know, learn, to hear other people's opinions. I find it interesting. I think other people will find it interesting. It's not because I'm propping this person up as somebody that I'm like, this is the guy. Like, this is, everything he does is legit. I'm into it. Like, what a crazy thing to think. Somebody just said, how much of this is caused by platforms which are picking and enforcing acceptable and unacceptable, in brackets, cancelable opinions or positions, sorry.
You mean like media outlets?
Yeah, like people are social media also. Like, you know, social media has decided that they should take on that role. Social media companies, I should say, have decided to take on that role of what's an acceptable opinion and what's not, and what news we should be allowed to have. And of course, your algorithm does that for you. It keeps you in your bubble, so it ensures you just keep seeing the same thing. I mean, I hate it because I fucking hate Facebook, but, like, you know, I look at Facebook and I just see the same thing over and over and over again, and it's so boring. And Facebook is doing that on purpose. Right, they're like, this is what you want to see. And it's like, no, I want to see something new. I want to see something different. Like, get me out of this trap. And no matter what I do, like, trying to like different stuff or follow different stuff, it doesn't matter because they're paying too close attention to my phone and everything that I click on, I guess. Like,
that's why I'm like only using Instagram now, because I just can't deal with the density of all the shit that comes at you on Facebook, and Instagram's just cleaner and simpler. But I think you were speaking to something really important, which is that, like, the further we go in this conversation, the more people are wanting to develop kind of like echo chambers of what's right and what's wrong. And people are really, really convinced that my way of looking at the world is right. And conservatives are just as convinced as people who think they're progressive and this is the only right way. And it's like, you realize that by shutting everything down, polarizing people further, we're essentially feeding into the kind of Trumpism that has led to Trump being the president. We're not actually like this insulated approach is making things so much worse. Yeah. But I don't know how we break it when we continue feeding into it by not having space for conversations with people who don't think like us. Like, now that you've been cancelled because, you know, you apparently are against trans people, so you now can't speak to them. And now you're against this other group, so now you can't speak to them. So, like, what's the aim? Where are we going?
Well, it's like, then what is it? Like, do you want me to only write about people like me? Okay, so I'm not allowed to write about China.
But that would be racist too, because then you're not representing anyone except white women.
Yeah, I should only write about white women living in small apartments in Canada on Main Street. Like,
this is not going to get us anywhere.
It's so counterproductive. And feminists talk about movement building a lot. And I'm talking about internet feminists in these critiques, you know, because I think that women who are on the ground and working and organizing and planning events and working on the front lines, I don't think they buy into this shit or participate in it. And I don't think they care. And I know, because I talk to these women all the time. Like, the problem with these people is they don't talk to other people in real life.
Yeah.
Like, they don't know what normal people think. They don't even know what actual feminists are actually doing. Because if they actually talked to them, they would know that people don't act like this in real life.
No.
They don't go around canceling people because they don't like everything that they say. And if they did, that would be weird.
Okay, but what has gone on in Canada where people who really are completely dislocated from the real world, like you say, people who are working on the front line are busy, like they're solving problems day to day. They're fucking busy. Like, we talked about this last week when I was talking about people who've been through a lot of adverse childhood experiences, which I think is one of the best measures of privilege, if we're going to talk about what is and what isn't privilege. I think adverse childhood experiences is one of the best ways to look at that. So if you see people who have been through a lot of shit, they tend to be focused on survival. People who are working with them on the front line tend to be focused on survival. So what has happened where in Canada, people who are insulated in their little internet bubble have come to be the ones rewriting legislation? Like, it feels like a kind of mass, and we're talking about the fear, obligation, and guilt thing, this kind of like mass fog of Canada, where people who live in the little internet world have actually managed to trap a whole series of political leaders with their fog. They've managed to drive people into political decisions through fear and obligation and guilt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and somebody, I thought this comment was interesting. Somebody says, it is the privatization of the public square, which is totally true. Like, I think that what these people are doing is neoliberalism. And I really don't like throwing around the word neoliberalism. I used to do that all the time.
Yeah, privatization,
it's like, this is neoliberal, da 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 da. But, you know, well, the fact that corporations, that these companies, that these social media companies own the public square now, and they're dictating what we say, and then the public is buying into that and supporting it. Like, they're acting like this is good liberal practice for these companies to be dictating what we talk about and what we say and what we ask and what we express. And these little groups who claim to be activists, who claim to be feminists, who claim to be leftists, who claim to be radical, that are really just operating online, you know, in their private Facebook groups, plotting to take down women who step out of line, are totally propping this all up. They want their bubble. They're going to enforce it. And they're only talking within a bubble. And the ironic thing about these people who do this is that, so they're not doing anything in real life. And yet I think that they're thinking that this is their activism, because they're too scared. So they're too scared to put their faces and voices and, you know, to stick their necks out. This is what makes me really mad about this too, is that the white women who led this whole thing against me in the first place, this was before these, whatever. I don't want to do this identity politics thing. Actually, who knows who anybody is on the internet anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, the people who were doing this are people who are too scared to come out and do something. Mm-hmm. So their activism is controlling these narratives on Facebook and running these secret Facebook groups and these closed groups. And they're deciding who's not a proper feminist and who's racist and who doesn't have the right analysis and who isn't a true leftist and kicking them out and canceling them. And they're deciding that for people who are doing something, people who are out there and taking risks. And, you know, and they're completely dependent on Facebook for their activism. Yeah. They're completely dependent on this company and this corporation, you know, like if I didn't have Facebook, it would be very hard to get my work and Feminist Current out there, but I would still continue to do this work. You know, this isn't, this isn't all that I do. I still go out there and talk to people and do things, and I would still continue writing. And, you know, it's just, I mean, I feel like they're propping up the thing that they claim to be against.
Yeah. You make a really good point. One of the things that I found really interesting talking about the kind of limits of liberal democracy under advanced capitalism, which is what I think a lot of these people are pointing to, is that essentially the civil, like civil society as it exists, has been in many ways subverted by our dependence on the economic system. So we can't necessarily have an entirely open conversation or an entirely open dialogue that's free of any kind of constraints from economic need. We depend upon the same systems which essentially oppress us. Okay, so we can acknowledge that. But then the new thing, cancel culture, has become another mechanism which silences and constrains us from speaking openly. So by looking critically at the way that economic systems oppress people from engaging in the civil society, engaging in democratic process, they are now replicating that process with a new kind of mechanism to further silence people. And like this guy who was the ethnic minority from China, actually marginalizing the people that are most silenced by the existing mechanisms, government and economic systems that are already marginalizing those people, engaging in cancel culture, which effectively brings to the foreground these very superficial examples of racism that are like a t-shirt or whatever it is, instead of what about the entire ethnic minority groups who are actually living in refugee camps right now, who don't even have the fucking internet. But we can't talk about that because we've got to talk about a t-shirt.
Well, those people don't exist because they're not in this Facebook group. So
right.
I guess they don't have online opinions. I mean, what if those people disagreed with your opinion? I mean, you'll never fucking know because you won't leave your fucking Facebook groups. But, like, these are the people you're apparently speaking on behalf, like, and really helping out.
Yeah.
But one of the things... Going after these individuals for sharing a link to a t-shirt by an artist that is not, you know, like, just some random independent artist. Like,
yeah.
It's their fault. Or, you know, it's my fault. It's probably the three of us. The three of us are all working in cahoots.
One of the things I find most marginalized people, I think it's really interesting that that people who claim to be progressive are very concerned about marginalized people who they see as people who cannot access economic and educational privileges. Right? If you actually spend time with people who cannot access educational economic privileges, people who, you know, are domestic workers and whatever, they have some really fucking problematic ideas about the world. Like,
you would definitely have to cancel them. Yeah,
exactly.
They wouldn't be up on all your jargon and your progressive opinions, and they would probably disagree with you, and you would be shocked and appalled, and you'd have to kick them out of your movement.
Yeah,
which is for them, apparently.
That's why it's like, you have to be open to the fact that everyone has different viewpoints, and like there's a reason for it. And I'm not saying people who aren't educated are dumb and like, oh, that's why.
And a lot of these people are right wing and like support capitalism or now like anti-abortion or whatever. Like, it's like you're ridiculous to think that you speak on behalf of these marginalized groups and that they also
do they genuinely believe that all economically oppressed people, let's say refugees are a great Marxist group. Yeah, like all refugees believe in Marxism and all they want to do. Like that is absolutely fucking false as fuck. There are a lot of refugees who don't give a fuck, who are out to like I'm speaking
from lived
experience here.
And like do it honestly. Annie actually pointed out in the comments that, I mean, first she said, these women only care about silencing if it's them who's silenced, which I think is actually a really important point, because it's like, you know, these are women who talk about the silencing of women, the silencing of feminists, and they're trying to silence other women. Like, I think that's really appalling. Yeah. Like, they're trying to destroy my reputation so that they can destroy my career, so that I don't have a platform, so that I can't speak, so that I don't have an income.
So you know, that what, is, though? I'm, do they know, want to take, do they want to use
they
that
want me to shut up.
But for what?
And they're trying to discredit Feminist Current. Like, they're going, it's me, so therefore, fuck Feminist Current. And, like, fuck everything that I do. And it's like, that's not really, that hurts a lot more women than just me. It would hurt me if you were trying, you know, like, if you are trying, I think, again, they don't really have any idea, like, how I make an income. Like, most of my income is just through donations. It's not like I have big funders or advertisers or I don't work for any
allies with the right.
The right wing isn't sending me any money. Like, but, you know, like, it's like those, that's like a platform for women's voices and a document of the women's movement. I've talked about this before. I'm just being broken record, but you know, like it's so hypocritical and ironic that they would dare speak about silencing women and dare speaking about silencing feminists and then do the exact same thing themselves in extremely vicious and dishonest ways by lying about me and saying these horrid things about me. And always, you know, speculating about my, you know, they're conspiracy theorists in many ways. Like, it's like, you know, I see on the internet people saying, you know, like, I saw that she said that she would date an alt-right guy. And I was like, get off your fucking glue, man. Like, I did not say that. But also, isn't it your business who I date? Like, why are you talking about who I date? Like, God. And the other thing Annie said that I wanted to mention in the comments was, I was talking to a woman in her 60s here in Canada, and she was a vital part of the pro-choice movement. And once she mentioned that working with the religious right was necessary. And this is what all these people talking about feminists moving to the right, which we're not, none of us are, you know, we're not becoming right wing. It's just, you know, some of them are doing panels or allying with the right in certain ways. Some of us are just having conversations with right-wing people or being friendly towards them, God forbid, trying to understand where they're coming from, God forbid. But, you know, I'm sorry, but this is how you get things done, is by working on issues. You don't get things done by insisting that everybody you speak to and work with agrees with you about everything. You'll never get anything done if that's the case. I mean, if you want to lobby politicians, are you only going to lobby politicians who agree with you on anything? Because that's crazy. Like, and just never mind in general, getting anything done with regard to a specific law or policy or issue or trying to change culture. If you're trying to change culture, you have to be reaching a huge amount of people in culture. And those people are not going to get on board with all of your opinions. And you're crazy if you think that's going to happen. Like, it's just such a weird concept to me. It's like you're so out to lunch if you think that.
Yeah. That was like I was saying, that when it comes to people who become really black and white in their thinking, I mean, this is one of the, I don't want to make generalizations here, but having incredibly black and white ways of looking at the world is a really bad sign for your mental health. If you can't deal with the kind of gray areas or the way that the black and the white overlap or the fact that there's complexities and there's not a clear line between right and wrong. So, for example, with your experience, like Megan Murphy has been defending a shirt with a bat joke on it. So she went from being in the totally right zone to being in the totally wrong zone. And that's like, that's an example of splitting behavior. And that kind of behavior is incredibly bad for your mental health and is indicative of issues going on that like you really need to work on. Because if you can only live in a world where people are completely right or completely wrong, then your mental health is really going to suffer. And there's things underlying there that have to be worked on, which is like dealing with the ways that perhaps you felt rejected. Like perhaps you felt like if you weren't right, then you weren't good enough. And for me, and that's why I brought up the example of fog and the example of jading, is because this is concepts that are coming from personality disorder work, which is, you know, people who have incredibly ingrained ideas about the world, who can only cope with seeing things as either completely right or completely wrong. Anything in between is discarded. Like you've got to fit into one box or the other. And that's really, really unhealthy. Everyone lives in the gray area. Life exists in the gray area. So if you're trying constantly to find ways to make things right or wrong, to me, that points to something far, far deeper, like something that you really need to talk out with someone. That's not just, it's not going to be as simple as like, make Megan Murphy the bad guy and I'll feel better. It's right. Not going to resolve that.
I mean, I don't understand what that is about, that black and white thinking and that need for something to be right and something to be wrong. Like, is it like you grew up in such chaos that you need some kind of like, you need that kind of rigid structure to deal with the world? Like,
I think it's in some ways about psychological safety and instability. So, if you have if you grew up in an environment that is fundamentally unsafe and unstable, there's no real platform for you to build a sense of identity on. But the way you might do that is by splitting things as being either good and therefore safe and for you, or bad, unsafe, you've got to get rid of it. And for people who are kind of disordered in their thinking, this isn't a kind of natural way of thinking. I'm going to find safety by making things either right or wrong, safe or unsafe. And it's kind of inherent in ways when you become like, I can become this way where I'm really anxious and irrational in my thinking. I've got to find ways to either realize that this is good or it's bad for me. And I'm going to get to the bottom of it. I'm going to get to the bottom of it and I'm going to either make this good or bad. And therefore I'm going to become psychologically safe again. And I'm going to be more sure of myself and my position in the world. And the fact is that you never do. The only way you get to the bottom is by starting to build a sense of security with the gray area. And that's like hard work for someone that's grown up in a fundamentally insecure or unsafe environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder if it's sort of similar to the kinds of people who have overly rigid boundaries because, you know, they experienced trauma when they were kids, or a lot of chaos in their families. And, you know, their response was just like, I'm going to have overly rigid boundaries. So I need to reject anyone who kind of does anything minorly wrong because they don't know how to navigate those gray areas and accept that, you know, sometimes I might feel uncomfortable and sometimes, you know, like people might do things that I don't like or that trigger me or that freak me out. And it's not necessarily, you know, they're being abusive and I need to cancel them from my life.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like for a lot of people that engage in cancel culture, it does seem to be that they perceive anyone's behavior that's not aligned with their thinking as an attack on them. And like it throws them into feeling unsafe. And to the outside observer, it's like, why do you feel unsafe? Like this is just someone with a different opinion. That's not a big deal. It's not an issue. But to someone who's feeling fundamentally unsafe because of past traumas, it is a massive affront to their foundation, their way of looking at the world. So it does kind of make sense that it's like you have to make this person wrong, because if I don't make you wrong, I'm not going to feel safe. So I've got to shut you down to feel safe. But it's kind of it's like a self fulfilling prophecy in that you don't end up feeling safe, so you keep doing it, thinking that like if I cancel enough people, I'll get to safety. Like if I just can enforce my way of looking enough, I'll feel safe. And I think Canada's kind of gone down this path of like, if we just legislate it and if we just like force enough people to use pronouns, then we'll all feel safe. And it's like, you're not going to find safety.
Well, yeah, not if you go out in the real world, because you're in the real world, you're going to get misgendered. Like maybe you can try to enforce it online. You announce your pronouns in your Twitter bio, and you scream at everybody and threaten anybody and ban them if they misgender you. But if you're at a store with some, you know, probably some seriously real working class person, not just somebody who's announcing it to you on the internet because they're working in retail at the dollar store or whatever, possibly even a POC, you know, they're very likely to misgender you. And that's, I guess, going to be traumatic. And then you end up being that guy in that store who screamed like whatever, it's man, motherfucker, and like went insane and got really violent, you know. Somebody in the comments just said youth breeds a lot of dogmatic behavior, and that's true. I mean, I think a lot of these anonymous accounts who are, you know, who shared some screenshots from my comments and decontextualized everything and got all these people saying like, oh my God, Megan is the worst and she loves rape and racism. And none of them even realized this wasn't about an article. I read through one Twitter thread and at some point this guy says, wait, is this about this article she wrote? And a bunch of people were like, what article? Like, they didn't have any idea what they were mad about, actually. And then some other guy is like, went and found the article and read it and was like, oh, is it this article? I just read it and she's 100% right. Like, this is totally, like, counterproductive. Like, and Lululemon's racist. Like, what? It's like she was making a critique about, like, you know, strategy around anti-racist politics and, like, you know, criticizing cancel culture. But, and then somebody else responded to him and was like, oh, I don't know. I was just kind of drunk and saw these screenshots and just went along with it. I didn't know that.
That's like the protesters outside your event. And they're like, what are you here to protest? And they're like, I don't know, something to do with gender.
I think there's sandwiches after. I wanted a lot of these people who do that kind of thing online, like they're trying to build a platform and they're trying to build a platform by going after somebody with a bigger platform. And that's something I used to do when I was younger. When I first started out as a blogger, my strategy was to go and to try to tear down somebody bigger than me, basically, you know, so I had something to say, to build a platform and because you sort of see these people as not human, you see them as very powerful because they have a bigger platform than you, and they don't even deserve that platform. So fuck them. I'm going to destroy them and I'm going to be the bigger one. And I'm admitting this, like, even though it's embarrassing and shitty and like, and I feel regretful about that. And, you know, and I learned from it. Obviously, I don't do it anymore. And that was a long time ago. But so when these people are doing it, I see what they're doing. And I see what they're doing because I've been there. And is that okay? And I don't know. I mean, the problem is that you can't say, like, I know what you're doing. No, I'm making a political critique. It's like, no, you're not. You're trying to tear me down shit on me because you think that I'm bigger than you and I don't deserve it. But I actually do deserve it, or I wouldn't be here. You know, I didn't weasel my way into this. Like,
I think
I didn't fucking trick anybody.
Yeah. I mean, for on one hand, like, you've got to accept and expect that with your platform comes this degree of feedback and criticism. And in some ways you have the absolute right to just ignore it. And on the other hand, it's reflective of the fact that we all have to kind of live in this gray zone. And that's why I was reflecting on how pissed off I was about conspiracy theorists and the fact that, like, I have to be okay with people are going to believe something that I think is totally invalid and totally not justified and not backed up. And it's infantilizing the way they present it. But you know what? Like, okay, I'm going to have to work with it because people are going to always be different than the way we expect them to be. They're not going to think the same way. Like, we have to work with it rather than being like, oh, let me find out what I can see about her personal life and share it with everyone and try and get everybody to stop supporting her work. Like, let's actually live in the gray area, which is, hey, I actually think differently to you on this, but I can see why you're taking that approach. I don't necessarily agree it's helpful, but you know what? Like, if that's what's working for you, then okay. Like, I get why you're doing that. You know what I mean?
You know, and to be honest, I mean, plenty of people do that. Like, I'm not being fair because I'm being so negative, but most people actually who I do engage with will say, I don't agree with you on all sorts of shit. And I, you know, got enough comments on that article too that said, I don't agree with you on this, but okay, like, I don't share your perspective, but I agree with you on other things, which is like a normal adult human response to be like, yeah, of course, like as if you're gonna like everything that one person writes or says, especially when they're a very like verbal person and is constantly pumping stuff out.
Like, if you're a journalist, there's going to be work that you're just not going to agree. But that's that thing of like switching into like splitting the person. And it's like, I totally agreed with you before. Now I've got to totally disagree with you.
Yeah, totally. I used to like you and now I hate you. It's like, wow, that happened fast.
But that's the thing. It's like, that's very dysfunctional way of living. Like, there's got to be an in-between where you can say, I don't agree with that view of yours, but I still respect that you have the right to have a different view. Like, I don't agree with conspiracy theorists about COVID, but I respect that they have the right to have those views.
Totally.
And I think that
they never want to silence their views. I mean, I don't agree. I think that they're wrong. And in some cases, I think it might be even dangerous, but...
Mm-hmm. But the point is we should talk about it instead of being like, let's dig up dirt and say like, oh, she dated this guy back in like 2005 who was a piece of shit. So let's like publish that. You know, like that's the totally unproductive way of
man, working. I've dated a lot of pieces of shit. So
what were we actually meant to talk about? Didn't you have an article that you wanted to talk about?
Well, we were supposed to talk about, like, we have been talking about social media, so we didn't get completely off track, but we were supposed to talk about like social media and mental health and how it disconnects people, and like we've been pushed to be on social media because of coronavirus and the lockdowns. And I don't know. I feel, what you was know, the there's article? Actually, there's research that shows that being on social media makes you more depressed and anxious than ever
before. Of course.
We were also supposed to do our private live stream for Patreon at 10:30. So
what was the article that you were going to share?
Oh, so, and and I think we were going to also maybe talk about sort of social media and porn culture and the way that like women moving to social media to make money. I mean, in general, this is happening, but also more so during COVID because they can't do actual prostitution work or because they've lost their jobs and they need another source of income. I mean, I thought the one article that I read that I thought was interesting was on BuzzFeed, and it was about this woman who was working for a mechanic, I think. And she got fired because her, is it an OnlyFans? Is that what it's called?
Account? Yes. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, where you people pay to watch your pornography. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
I'm like, I've never been on OnlyFans. So she got fired because she had an OnlyFans account where she was doing porn and she was advertising on her Instagram account. So some of the guys she worked with at the mechanics found out and like started bugging her about it. And then she got fired. And I think we were all supposed to be appalled by this. But further down in the article, it explains that some of the pornography that she posted in the OnlyFans account was in her work uniform at work in the bathroom.
Ooh.
So they were kind of BuzzFeed and she, as the good liberals they are, were saying that she got fired for doing porn and that these guys were sexually harassing her and that they outed her. So she was like, oh my God, you're telling everybody at work that I'm doing this OnlyFans thing. And I was just like, you are advertising it on your public Instagram account where your work people follow you.
Yeah,
what are you talking about? Like, I'm not saying she should have been fired, but I don't think that she was fired for what she's saying she's fired for. I think, if anything, she was fired for, you know, doing porn at work and then posting porn in her uniform at her workplace on her porn account. It's like, I'm sure those guys were being gross creeps. Like,
I'm sure they can,
like, fuck off, but that's not really it. And I just was like, this is some weird inability to understand that, like, it's like you're being outed for being in porn, but it's like that's unfortunately one of the horrible things about pornography is that women do porn when they're young, usually because they need the money or, you know, they've been groomed to do porn, they've experienced trauma and abuse or something like that. And then it's on the internet forever and they don't own it. Somebody else owns it.
Mm-hmm.
And men can just use this over and over and over again and watch, you know, their abuse and their exploitation over and over and over again. But, you know, it's permanent. You know, it's something that so many women around the world do by choice and not by choice. And obviously the choice, the reasons that women choose it are incredibly complex and usually... for lack of choice. You know, it's like, I found it weird that she was sort of trying to blame these guys at her work for talking about it or accusing them of outing her when she obviously outed herself. And, you know, I feel bad that she feels that she needs to do this to make money. Maybe she's not making enough money at her job, but it's just a really strange framing of the whole thing. Like, it's like you're being punished for being a sex worker and you're being outed for being a sex worker and you're being sexually harassed, and it's like you're advertising this publicly to people that you work with, and they're probably gonna act weird too because they just saw you naked. Like,
right, it's very strange because
like they don't know you. Like, they're not, I mean, they know you, but it's not, I don't know. I mean, it is a tough one because I don't want to, I'm sure those guys were being assholes, like,
and
gross. Yeah. So I'm not defending their behavior at all.
Yeah.
Whatever they were doing. I don't know. I wasn't there.
I was thinking about this because I feel like the Instagram modeling world has really blurred the boundaries with pornography. And so it's kind of like this soft entry point into the world of pornography. So you go from having a Instagram account where you're kind of posting like hot photos, and then it sort of leads, it's a slippery slope into having an OnlyFans or a Snapchat premium. And then you're selling sexy photos. And like I told you, I was looking at Reddit, and I look at Instagram marketing on Reddit because I'm interested in those trends. And then the next thing was Instagram models. And I was like, oh, this will be interesting. It was just pornography under the Instagram models Reddit. It was literally just straight up pornography. And I was like, that's really interesting. So it says that the way people are understanding Instagram modeling is very much framed within the context of pornography, like the end point of all of this is really pornography. It's just a kind of continuum that takes you down the path to producing pornography. But in the case of someone who's producing pornography at work, like, it raises so many issues around people jump in now, I've noticed, to the sex work is work mantra. And like, we need to respect sex workers. So if you're going to buy porn, you've got to respect the sex workers who are making porn. And it's this like huge thing in a number of Facebook groups I follow. It's like anytime a woman brings up the fact that she's uncomfortable with her partner purchasing porn or engaging with women who create porn, like cam girls, anytime a woman brings that up, they're like, but sex work is work. Why don't you respect sex workers? You should pay for it. You should respect the women who are in this job. And it's like, okay, but you're missing the point, which is that women feel degraded by their partners going down this path, which is initially it might be free porn and then it's paid for porn and then it's a cam girl and then it's talking to her and then it's asking for specific things. And it's kind of like this gateway to infidelity. So I feel like there's this whole new complexity now through social media, which is like women just being themselves. And then next minute it's like, oh, but if I be a little bit sexy, more men follow me. And then they start this trend towards like selling your images,
mm-hmm.
and what that's doing to relationships. Like, it's really, it's crazy.
Well, to see that men are being told that it's okay to look at that because it's just work, and actually to respect women,
yeah,
you should pay for that. Like, this is just a job like any other. So I'm sure it's hard on the relationships of the women who are selling pornography on the internet and sharing nudes with men for money. But also those men who are accepting those now have this new excuse to tell their girlfriends, their partners, their wives, whatever, which is like, oh, this is just work. This is just a job. And I'm respecting her by paying for her. Like, what are you a whorephobe? I hate to interrupt, but we can continue this conversation on Patreon. I just feel bad because we're getting late and people will be too tired to join us for the Patreon only. So we're moving to our Patreon only segment, group therapy, where we sort of get more drunk.
yeah. What are we talking about on Patreon?
Well, I think we're going to talk a little bit more about social media and the impact of social media and relationships. Like, you and I were talking about this earlier this week, the kind of like, I mean, and you see this all the time. Like, if you read that Reddit, like, relationship advice thread, like, you see all these problems that couples are having because of their social media stuff. Like, why won't you post photos of me on Instagram? And you and I were talking about some arguments that we'd had with partners in the past, like around social media behavior. And I think that social media is offering this whole new dimension of conflicts and problems and boundaries that are really challenging. So I think there was that. And then, I mean, who knows? Obviously, half the time we never talk about all the things we say we're going to talk about. But, and we talk about my personal life and, you know, how I'm feeling about things.
Awesome. Okay.
Okay. So, sorry, we're going to go. Thanks, everyone, for coming. We posted the Patreon link down below. So if you click on it, I'll have the link to the private live stream, which we keep private because they're not always things we want to talk about publicly. But also, like, if you come there, you can ask us more questions. You can, like,
please do not repeat the things you hear in that segment.
Don't tell anyone. Thanks. It was really fun to see you all. I really enjoy these Thursday nights with everyone, and come back next week or we'll see you on Patreon. Okay. Bye, guys.
Everyone. Bye.